You're getting a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
A sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
To be honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Happy Halloween, everybody. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Brains Mindell, alongside Eyeballs Ginsburg, and the most horrific of all these scary characters, the lawyer, Richard Pollock. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday afternoon as we get you set for the Jets and the Blue Jackets. 6 p.m. tonight in Columbus between the Winnipeg Jets and the Columbus Blue Jackets. We're going to hear from Jody Shelley.
The Blue Jackets?
I did call them the Blue Jackets. It's part of I'm going with the theme. Have you caught on yet? Anyways, Jody Shelley, Blue Jackets analyst from Fox Sports Ohio, is going to join us in about 30 minutes' time. Also on the show today, we're going to talk about the Montreal Canadiens with Arpan Basu of NHL.com. And Adam Proto is going to join us to whip around the NHL, talk about everything going on in the league we know and love. I say good morning to you, gentlemen. Richard, Ezra, how are you, gentlemen? Happy Halloween to you both.
You know, I know there's a haunted house going on right now in the station. That's a great setup. It's
open to the public, noon to 6 today. Come on down to the station here and you can check out the haunted house.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny because I feel like every Saturday when we get together and do the show, I feel like I'm haunted by Drew. So yeah. it's going to be a great Halloween show here. But I just hope that, you know, Drew puts on a mask.
Very funny. Very funny. Richie, good morning. How are you doing?
Couldn't hear him or see him in that case. Well, Drew, yeah, this is a fun show to do. Looking forward to it, you know, working with Rick later on, too, so it's a long day at the station.
Are you guys both dressing up for the pre- and post-game show as well?
I feel like Rick's for sure going to wear, like, those glasses with the fake mustache, you know, that attach the fake mustache. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's what he's going to wear.
Yeah, but I think that's just his usual Saturday wear, isn't it, as opposed to anything for Halloween. Anyways, let's get started by looking back at the Winnipeg Jets homestand, which finished up on Thursday night, finished up on a solid note with a 3-1 defeat of the defending Stanley Cup champion Chicago Blackhawks. As a result, the homestand finishes 3-2-1 in the six games that they played here. Six very competitive games, really, for the Jets in terms of even the games they lost. They very easily could have taken at least 1 point out of both of the games they lost cleanly, that against the Kings and the Blues, giving up late goals in the third period in both of those games. I'd say 3-2-1, it was a very difficult stretch. Probably, you know, Paul Maurice and the Winnipeg Jets organization has to be pretty happy with that six-game homestand to start the year.
Yeah, they go 3-2-1 on the homestand, and you obviously would like to have gone 6-0 or 5-1, but as you mentioned, Drew, they rebound from a really disappointing loss to the LA Kings, where I really thought that they should have at least gotten a point and really gotten the win there, because I didn't think the LA Kings were particularly impressive. It was a close game, and I thought that was not the Jets' A game. And the Blackhawks' win was impressive because it was a very workmanlike effort. The Chicago Blackhawks really poured it on in the third period, badly outchanced the Jets, but the Jets were able to hang on, and that's in large part due to the way Michael Hutchinson played. He's been amazing against the Hawks. He made 44, 45 saves, whatever it was. But as a whole, Drew, the first 10 games of the season, you're 6-3-1. And as opposed to the last 3 years where you've been 4-5-1, same identical records, you got to be happy with that. And you have to be happy with the fact that you started the season with a nice 3-1 road trip, and then you're able to come home and you're able to play a variety of teams in division and out of division and still have a really solid record in the Central Division. And I realize that the Jets haven't separated themselves much in the Central Division, Richie, because everybody aside from the Colorado Avalanche seem to be losing. What's going on with the Avalanche, by the way? We'll talk about that maybe later in the show. But every single team, Richie, aside from Colorado, is in it right now. And I realize Chicago lost again last mm-hmm. night to Minnesota. Minnesota's off to a great start. Nashville's off to a great start. Dallas is rebounding from missing the playoffs last year. They look great. It's going to be tough. We expect five teams to make it in the Central, right, Drew?
Yeah.
So you got to get off to a good start. So overall, I like the way the Jets have played here, you know, in the two, if you want to break it up between the first four road games and the six, the game homestand. Sure, maybe they gave up too much chances, Richie, and that was probably something that, Paul Maurice is going to address, because you can't give up that many shots. I realize it's the Blackhawks, but they got to tighten it up a little bit there. But as a whole, I mean, we're nitpicking a little bit. At the end of the day, they're getting pretty balanced offensive production, good goaltending. The defense is struggling a little bit, but it's been fairly solid. So things are good right now, and the Jets are healthy.
Yeah, I agree with, for the most part, what you had to say there. They've had a successful road trip. Homestand. I mean, I don't think that the Jets have played... I think they've played well. I think they can play better. So I think that's what you're going to have as an encouraging sign if you're the team. You think, okay, you know, we... Could we have got a point against LA? You know, should we have got the win against Chicago? I mean, many of these games could go both ways as far as I'm concerned. So to be able to get some points out of it, you feel good about it, and I think the Jets can play better. But they've played fairly well. I think there's been points on the board from the likes of Blake Wheeler and some of those top members of the top line, but have we really seen a dominant performance from that group? I wouldn't say you have yet. I think they're capable of more. I think some of the defensemen are capable of more. The goaltending has been very good. So overall, you know, it's a good road trip, homestand again, sorry. But you said, Ezzy, you know, you after 10 games, you're 6-3-1.
And Richie, if you're looking for, you know, problems with this team, again, you know, you go back to, you know, some of the play in their defensive zone, giving up too much chances, right? But, you know, the biggest problem the Jets might have right now is who do you go with in net? And they're going to keep rotating the goaltenders. Paul Maurice, there's no indication that...
Pavlik today against the Blue Jackets, I should mention off the top there.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if Hutchinson plays against the Montreal Canadiens, and I wouldn't be surprised if they go with the kind of Paul Maurice rotation, as we've called it, for the foreseeable future, unless one of the goalies struggle. So right now, your issues are good issues to have, right? Mm-hmm. This isn't like there's fundamental issues with the team like there was when Paul Maurice took over from Claude Noel 2 years ago. So this team is playing really well. The scoring is very balanced. I think the fourth line, even though they haven't played much, has been good.
They're playing more than they did last year.
They need to learn how to defend better. I think their goalies have bailed them out of... I think the reason for their goaltending, I think primarily is goaltending. The reason for their record being so strong, is goaltending. You're 6-3-1. Pavlik and Hutchinson have both been very good.
Yep.
And I think that's, at the end of the day, what you're looking at for the reason for the points. There has been other good things that have happened, don't get me wrong. But this record could easily be 4-5-1 or 5-4-1 if there was a couple of bad goaltending performances.
I'm feeling good about,
you feel good about the points in the bank, and you feel better about the fact that you know you can play better.
Sure. Well, that's what Paul Maurice is probably taking to the dressing room. He's saying, you know, guys, this is great. We're off to a terrific start. We're, you know, steady as she goes, 6-3-1. But he's also using, you know, despite winning 6 out of their 10 games, you know, they're winning 60% of their games. He also has a lot where he can still teach the team so that he can say, you know, there's still room for improvement here. And there's always room for improvement for every team. But a lot of those times the coaches, you know, are nitpicking when they do that. This is a situation where there are, you know, some holes that the Jets need to address. And you mentioned, you know, giving up too many shots, maybe being too reliant on the goaltenders, the defensive zone coverage a little bit lacking at times. So you're happy. You're winning. You're not playing perfectly. You're winning. And you hope that you only improve upon that.
Yeah, to Richie's point, I mean, you could look at the Minnesota game and you could say, okay, well, they had Darcy Kemper in net and he was horrible. Mm-hmm. And you're against a team who was in the first game of a back-to-back. And then you could say against Chicago, you're playing a team that couldn't score any goals. Although last night, if you saw the game, they scored 4 goals against the Wild. So you knew that the Hawks were going to start scoring in regulation, Drew. I mean, it was just a matter of time. But you could say, okay, well, the Jets caught a couple teams, you know, in vulnerable positions, right? But they got the wins. So I can't sit here and say that the Jets aren't off to a really good start, because they are. And I agree with Rich. I think they aren't dominating, and I think they can play better. But I think 6-3-1 with a tough road trip to start the season and some pretty hard teams coming into your own building. Like, there weren't that many easy – like, which one of the games would you say was an easy game? The LA
Calgary.
Kings. The LA Kings were the only non-playoff team that they played here based on last year, right?
Yeah.
So it was –
but based on their performance so far this year –
the schedule has not been easy.
Yeah.
No. Based on the performance so far
this year –
but it's not
going to be easy all year with the division that they're in.
That's right. You play in the Central Division, but, I mean, the only game there that we're, you know, had a team that's really been struggling is Calgary.
Right. And that was a playoff team last year.
Yeah.
So it's not like they're playing, you know, the Coyotes or the Devils, which – by the way, both teams are surprising a lot of us by winning a lot of games, right? So there aren't any easy games in the NHL. I mean, you're going to play teams later in the season that are a mess. But early on in the season...
Well, think about it. Who's the best, if you ask this question on that point, Who's the best team in the NHL right now?
Based on this year?
There's 12 answers. There's 12 answers to that question.
Well, I would have a few teams, but yeah, Richie, I don't know if there's an undisputed number one. I mean, you could say Montreal, you could say Chicago, you could say Tampa.
I mean, I could tell you flaws in all those teams.
Well, and that's what the NHL wants. I mean, we talked about this last year a whole bunch, is that the parity and the, you know, lack of having a juggernaut is what the NHL has wanted and finally achieved.
Oh, they have it, for sure. There's no good team. There's no great teams. There's good teams.
Yeah.
And so when we're talking about that, you know, the Jets have that ability. And I said it on the with the season preview show. I wouldn't be surprised if a team in the Central finishes first or last. I mean, that's how close it is. And you look at the standings right now. Chicago, 12 points. Dallas, 16 points. That's a 4-point spread between first and sixth.
Yeah. Taking Colorado out of the picture because they're a mess.
Well, they've lost two straight games to Carolina, who most of us predicted to be the worst team or the second worst team in the NHL. So that's just a perfect example.
Bill Peters has been doing a nice job there, though. That team's working hard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, putting pucks on net.
Yeah. They're not going to push over. I mean, there's a few teams that are bad, really bad, like they were last year. But there's not as many teams. There's way more, you know, average teams than there are great or terrible teams. Right.
There's going to be more parity this year, Drew, because you had Edmonton drafting McDavid. You had Buffalo drafting Eichel. You had Carolina getting Hanifin. It was one of the best drafts we've seen in the last 5 or 7 years.
Yeah.
So a lot of teams were able to draft really good players. And not only that, I mean, they made other moves too. But the point being that you're not going to see those low points. You're not going to see, like, the Buffalo Sabres have 52 points or whatever they had last year. Those teams have gotten a little bit better, and they're competitive now. So it might take 105 points to get into the playoffs this year.
Yeah, it's going to certainly be a battle. We know that. Going back to the homestand, I mean, Michael Hutchinson on Thursday night, you know, 45 saves. And, you know, I think that was a little misleading in my eye, though. I mean, he made some very good saves. The save on Hossa on the breakaway was huge for the Jets and everything else. But as Chicago sort of peppered the Jets with shots in the third period, I thought a lot of them were from the outside. The Jets did a good job keeping the shots away from being sort of in the real danger zone. Hutchinson had to be solid, but I didn't think he had to be absolutely spectacular to make a lot of those saves.
I mean, he said in the post-game interview, it's easier to play when you get more shots, which I think most goalies will tell you. I thought the best aspect of his game on Thursday night was his ability to eat pucks. That's no rebounds. And, I mean, it's amazing that I thought he ate pucks real well, and still he still had 40 whatever shots it was on net. So I do agree, Drew, for most of the – I mean, nobody hit anybody in that game, except for Mark Stewart and Jonathan Toews. I mean, nobody hit anyone. So a lot of the shots on both sides were from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
But even when he was tested a few times inside between the hash marks there in the house by hosts and different players, he was able to stand up to that challenge. And yeah, I thought it was a very encouraging performance. I was surprised they actually started Hutchinson. It was a good decision because he performed exceptionally well. And he looks confident in the net, which I think is big for him. There's everything about his performance I'd like. So if you're the Jets and you go back to Pavlik tonight, and if he plays great, he feels good about it. And if he doesn't, then you go to Hutchinson and you feel good about that.
I know you could overrate this a little bit, Richie, but the way he's played against Chicago, you got to wonder if even if he's coming off of a back-to-back, he plays against Chicago. He just seems to own them. And that happens in sports sometimes, right? Certain players are just really good against certain teams. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, it's kind of hard to explain, right? Because you're talking about, you know, Richie mentions the Chicago Blackhawks. They might not be a great team. They lost some key players. That's still a really good hockey team. And there was no Duncan Keith.
Which is a huge difference. I mean, let's be honest here. They were able to generate a ton of shots against the Jets. I'm not going to say amazing quality chances, but a ton of shots against the Jets. And they replaced Duncan Keith, arguably the best defenseman in the National Hockey League, with Svedberg, who certainly can't move at the NHL level as of now. Maybe he turns into a defenseman later on, certainly more of a depth defenseman, I'd expect. But, I mean, that's a huge loss. I mean, their game is, if you watch their game is transition. Their game is speed and puck movement from the back end. So without him, and on the power play, without him, it's a significant loss. And you saw their power play. It goes through Seabrook, different.
Mm-hmm.
Seabrook's a very good player. And Chalmerson's an exceptionally good player. But they're loaded up top. You saw on the back end last year, they played four guys at the end of the season. And Trevor Daley didn't seem to fit in from what I could see. Now, again, he's playing third pairing with David Rundblad, who made just the worst turnover in that game on the doodling with the puck and then ending up on the wrong side with his back to the play, I mean, turning the puck over. So it's hard to see with Daley, if he's playing with Rundblad, how good he is. But right now, I don't think he's certainly comfortable yet.
It'll be interesting to see. The Jets get full marks for their 3-2-1 homestand. When we come back after these commercials, we'll look at the month ahead for the Winnipeg Jets. 15 games starting tonight until the end of November. We'll talk about it next. You're listening to the Elite to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Jets keep it in. Perreault right side point again. Perreault stick handling. Cross ice pass. Little shot. Stop. Rebound. They score. Andrew Ladd with the putback. And the Jets get a power play goal. It's 2-1. Winnipeg.
The game-winning goal by Jets captain Andrew Ladd Thursday night against the Blackhawks. The Jets hope to get the end of October being tonight and then the month of November off to a good start with games tonight in Columbus and tomorrow evening in Montreal. Of course, both games available here on TSN 1290. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. 15 games for the Winnipeg Jets in the month of November, including tonight's game, which is at the end of October. 6 versus the Eastern Conference, 9 versus the Western Conference, 7 of which are in-division games. 6 games against teams currently higher than the Jets in the standings, 6 against teams in the bottom third of the NHL, 3 against teams in the so-called middle. It really is a mixed bag for the Winnipeg Jets as they enter into the month of November. You know, 6-3-1 in October, you know, if you can, you know, get the equivalent of that over 15 games in November, you certainly would be happy if you're Jets coach Paul Maurice.
Yeah, and Drew, if you look at the next 15 games in 3-5 kind of stages,
mm-hmm.
This is a really crucial part of the season. And we know that if you're in a playoff spot in early December, it's a lot easier to hold that playoff spot as opposed to be chasing a playoff spot. So whether that's 4 or 5 points, those 4 or 5 points are a lot harder to make up as the season progresses and you have less and less time. Pretty simple, right?
Sure.
But this 5-game stretch here with 2 back-to-backs and then coming back against Philadelphia,
mm-hmm.
you'd think that the Jets could potentially win 4 of those 5 games and at the very least win 3 of those games, because when you're talking about the Leafs and you're talking about the Flyers and Blue Jackets coming up tonight,
mm-hmm.
those aren't very good teams right now. And the Flyers, I would probably say, are the best of those 3 teams, especially with Giroux and Voracek still doing their thing, top scorers in the NHL. But the Blue Jackets are a mess.
Sure.
And the Leafs are a mess too. To me, it's that next 5-game stretch. So you're talking about after the Flyers come into town next weekend,
yeah.
and then you start off on the road for a 5-game road trip, a 4-game road trip, and you play all Central Division teams. You've got the Wild, Stars, Predators, Blues, and then you come back, and then you've got the Canucks, and then, you know, throw in the Coyotes there. We're talking, you know, 3 weeks in advance right now, but to me, that's a really hard stretch. And as you mentioned, you know, you've got 10 of 14 road games in November. With the exception, I counted only 3 games that I would call quote-unquote gimme games, even though there aren't any gimme games. So you're talking about the Avalanche home and away towards the end of month of November, and then I mentioned the Coyotes. So those are 3 teams that aren't very good in the Western Conference. But on any given night, you can lose those games, Richie. But
well, that's just it, right? It doesn't happen how you think it's going to happen.
Right. The point being, it's a tough month of November. Like this is going to be a tough month. If they are in a playoff position at the end of November, which I expect them to be, I don't see them missing the playoffs because now
hold
you
hold on, hold on, wait. That looks like a revision of your prediction there.
Well, I picked the Jets.
The old switcheroo.
I picked the Jets to finish just out of a playoff spot. I picked them to finish 10th in the West, just for the record. So I didn't pick them to be, you know, a bottom team. I thought with Dallas emerging, LA emerging, I actually picked Colorado too, by the way, which looks like that's a pretty terrible pick. But I mean, hey, I'm looking wrong right now.
I have Calgary, so it's worse. No, I'm joking. Yeah. I mean, I agree that the month is difficult. I mean, I looked at the schedule, I broke it down game by game. I think the Jets go 9-5-1 here.
They'll take that.
And I think they'll take that for sure. You know, and I think that's a good. And I think, you know, as he talks about game by game and all that, we know they're gonna beat Montreal and lose to Toronto. I mean, that's just what happens. These games aren't predictable, and the NHL is so up and down. So, and when do you catch the team? Are they playing well? Is the goalie hot? So, if I look at the squad, there's a lot of easy games in this. Like, I don't, this next 15 game stretch, I don't see as very difficult.
Well,
I mean, the road makes it maybe more difficult. You don't get the matchups that you want, but you're playing a lot of bad teams here.
the most difficult part of that is the four games against the Central Division teams. You got four games in the span of 6 days.
You're playing
all
those
teams
5 times, Drew.
So, oh, I know.
Mean,
I'm not saying it's impossible.
So you get a lot of Eastern teams, Toronto and Philly, and, you know, I mean.
Oh, you got Colorado twice, and they're a mess, and everything else. But, I mean, if, you know, the games that you're circling as almost the most important of all those games are those four games, you know, in the middle of the month, starting on the 10th of November, right up till the 16th of November, where you got Minnesota, Dallas, Nashville, St. Louis. I mean, those are the ones that, you know, before that, it's not a difficult schedule. You're right. You got Columbus, you got Toronto, you got Philadelphia. I mean, on paper, are you better than Ottawa? You're probably better than Ottawa. I mean,
I would agree with that.
You know, Montreal has obviously been, you know, terrific to start the year. But, you know, it's sort of, you know,
they would skate with Montreal. It would be a good, interesting contest. Similar, Jets are transforming to that style. They should be able to keep up. They kept up with Chicago, I thought. I mean, Chicago did generate more opportunities in my mind, but they're able to keep the pace of the game was, I thought, more in line with what the Jets wanted to do and have become than it was against LA, when I felt like the Jets were a little bit overmatched physically.
Right. I mean, if you're looking at the physical game, you know, the teams that you're playing that are physical. Well, tonight against the Blue Jackets, they're physical. But the Jets
they're absolutely physical.
The Jets have been sitting in Columbus since yesterday afternoon. Yeah. The Blue Jackets played last night in Washington, where they lost.
Early in the game, in the season, Drew, they're very desperate.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I read too much into the back to back.
And the Jets, the Jets can play a physical game, and in fact, the Jets actually, kind of ironically, have more difficulty with the physical teams. And do better against the skilled teams. And that's why you saw, you know, some troubles against LA. You saw troubles against St. Louis. Not to say that I don't mean that they have trouble with the physical game. I mean, you know, Mark Stewart, Dustin Byfuglien, Jacob Trouba, Adam Lowry. I mean, they have physical players. What I mean is that I think sometimes, Richie, they get a little bit caught up in that, and you see them take some more penalties. So I don't think they're going to have trouble with Columbus's physicality. I just mean, if you look at kind of the teams that they've had some trouble with, and Minnesota is a team that isn't overly physical, but they gave up that lead. But they should be able to beat Columbus. I mean, as Richie mentioned, Columbus has a couple of wins on the season. This is the first home game for Torts, so does that mean anything? I don't think so. I just don't think they have an identity right now.
Well, the Columbus Blue Jackets definitely are a mess. So if you're the Jets, you're looking at that as an opportunity to take advantage of a team that is 2-9. They're just not a very good team right now, the Blue Jackets. Now, you know, does that necessarily translate into an automatic victory? Of course not. It depends on how the game's going to be played out, and we'll preview that game coming up in a couple of segments from now. But if you're just looking at the month of November for the Winnipeg Jets, there's no games ever that they play against where they're a decided underdog or anything along those lines.
And I want to say something, because Richie mentions that he thinks the Jets will go 9-5-1. And, you know, I think that's pretty accurate. And I think at the very least, they're going to get 8 wins out of the 15. Looking at, you know, who they're playing. But to me, the biggest difference between this Jets team this year and last year is this Jets team is a good team now. They became a good team last year. They're a playoff team now. Not meaning that they're necessarily guaranteed to make the playoffs, meaning they are coming off of making the playoffs. So this is a team now that when they go on the road and they go into games, they know they can beat all these teams. And that changed last year when they went into Chicago and beat Chicago 3 times. So, you know,
what you're saying, Ezzy, if I can paraphrase, is last year when they went into Chicago and they won, or they went into Madison Square Garden and they won, people were shocked because there was no expectations.
Right.
Whereas this year, when they beat the Rangers in Madison Square Garden, when they beat the Blackhawks at home, when they go into a difficult opposing building and win, it's not shocking anymore. It's almost standard operating procedure of a good hockey team.
Right, and even though they have 10 of 14 games on the road, the Jets have started well on the road so far this year, winning 3 of 4 games, and they were good on the road last year. Look at when the Jets go into buildings, Richie, the other coach, you know, whether that's John Tortorella or Michel Therrien or Mike Babcock in Toronto, they look at this team and they say, Blake Wheeler, he's a top 10 right winger in the NHL. Nikolai Ehlers, he's one of the best rookies in the NHL. He might be a Calder candidate. The goaltending, pretty good goaltending. They look at defense and they say, Tyler Myers has been pretty good since he came over from Buffalo. Byfuglien's got the big shot. I mean, this is a team that scares a lot of teams. They have to go on the defensive against the Jets. This isn't a team that comes in anymore and you know, you can push around. Not that the Jets have ever really been pushed around. I think that was maybe in the first couple of years. But needless to say, this is a team that has a lot of speed and a lot of skill, and teams have seen what they've done now over the last couple of years. So it's not a team that is taken lightly anymore, I guess is what I'm saying. And as a part of that, I think the Jets are also a confident group, and they know now that they've had success and they want to continue that success.
Well, I think that's certainly, you know, the Jets winning as they did last year and as they did so far this year, you know, does breed a sense of arrogance. And I'm not saying arrogance in a negative sense of the word, but I mean, a negative sense, you know, the positive that, you know, yeah, we can skate with anybody. Yeah, we can play with anybody. Yeah, we're as good as anybody. So good arrogance in that sense.
Well, they look like a confident group against Chicago. When Chicago was pressing at the end of the game on Thursday night, the Jets weren't panicked, and in previous years you might see them panic in their own zone a little bit. It looked like a team that knew they could hold on to the lead.
No argument for me. Richie, anything yet to add on that?
No, I think there's a transformation. I think there's two parts. Paul Maurice gets in, he adds a structure to the team and builds a system that he thinks the team will succeed with. I think what I've liked about Paul Maurice's running of the roster and the other coaches, Charlie Huddy, Pascal Vincent, is that he has allowed the team to play a different style this year based upon the personnel. And I always think coaches are better off and are better, they're better coaches when they game plan as per the talent they've been given, as opposed to being rigid in the same game plan regardless of who their players are. So the Jets, to me, are a different team. We've said it on the show numerous times since the beginning of the season. They're a different team than they were last year. Their structure is different, but it's still there. And I think there are some growing pains that have come and are going to come in terms of the defensive game. But I like that their identity has – they have an identity, first off. They didn't have one before. They have one. It's changed a little bit, but they maintain that identity, and I think that's a positive.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Jody Shelley, Columbus Blue Jackets analyst, is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. 12:30 in the afternoon. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Happy Halloween, everybody. In case you're looking for something to do with your little one, be sure to head down here to the station. The haunted radio station is in full force.
Well, it just got really scary because apparently Lawless is in the building. So.
Wow, that's frightening. Is he in costume or is he just jumping out at people and scaring them?
I don't know if he's in costume. I haven't seen him out there, but okay. Sabrina Carnevale from our sister station just came by and told me that Gary's here, so I'm frightened right now.
Okay, that sounds reasonable. This is also a good opportunity to remind people that for Halloween a couple years ago, you dressed up as Gary Lawless.
I did dress up as Gary Lawless, and I got to say, I did Lawless better than Lawless.
You did.
Yeah, it was a pretty good Lawless, I must say. Yeah. Anyways, I believe we have Jody Shelley, Columbus Blue Jackets analyst, on the line, so let's go to the hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program. He's a Columbus Blue Jackets TV analyst on Fox Sports Ohio, Jody Shelley. Jody, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me on here today.
Our pleasure. Jody obviously brought you on to talk about the Blue Jackets. And, you know, we had your colleague or your Aaron Ports line on earlier, probably a couple weeks ago, when the coaching change was made in Columbus. How has the team responded to John Tortorella? We lost last night in Washington, but prior to that, they'd won two of their previous two games. You know, have they begun to turn the corner after what has just been a horrendous start to the season for the Blue Jackets?
Well, you know, interesting team, because lots of expectations coming into this season. First time for this franchise that they've been talked about in this way. And they really laid an egg for the first eight games. Barella comes in, and I don't know if they've turned the corner. They are doing things much better. You know, anybody knows it's no secret. When you get a new coach, there's a push. And you guys saw it with Paul Maurice up in Winnipeg, and now he's really got that team on track. And I expect that's what's going to happen here. There's a certain brand of hockey that John Tortorella wants his team to play. And he was frustrated last night with a question that someone asked about, are you giving up offense because your focus is defense? And he simply said, no, to win in this league, you've got to play defense first, and you have to have that mindset and wait for your offensive opportunities. So, you know, a lot of guys have bought in. There's guys that you wouldn't expect. Young Bill Carlson is a Swedish kid that had a good camp, was really the only guy that had a good camp, and then hung around, waited for his opportunity. And, boy, he's really been a bright spot, blocking shots and doing things you wouldn't expect out of him. So there's been guys that have risen under Tortorella, and I expect that there'll be more of them.
Jody, I imagine you're just as surprised as everybody else at the way the Blue Jackets started the season, not winning any games, and then Todd Richards losing his job. I actually, on this show, picked Todd Richards to be a Coach of the Year nominee and winner, and that didn't turn out to be a good pick. But considering that there were such high expectations for Columbus this year and all the injuries last year, is there something that you can point out as the main reason why Columbus has been so slow out of the gates?
You know, I was surprised along with you. I was confident in this defense. And I go back to last season, they had Letestu and Anisimov down the middle, who are very, very smart players. And you guys know, with a good goalie and some solid defense and some exceptional centermen, you've got the defensive zone taken care of. And those guys are out. Then you got Gregory Campbell in and Dubinsky moved back to the middle. Those things have just compounded. And I go back to game one. I'm telling you, game one here with the expectations, Brandon Saad scored the goal, a go-ahead goal in the New York Rangers in front of 19,000 here. It was 2-1, and the script was written. And within seconds, it was 4-2 for the Rangers, and everyone in the building, including the players, kind of like were like they were on the mat. They were on their back, and they didn't know what just happened. And they reeled from that. Bobrovsky hasn't been the same since. He's now getting his game back. The defense lost confidence, and it was a downward spiral from that moment. I honestly think that put them on their heels for four solid games. They look nothing like themselves. They've struggled to get back. They got a new coach. Their identity is the same, but they're still not where they need to be.
You know, Jody, you look at John Tortorella and his past, and certainly there's been some success and some failure, but there also has been some relationships with players that have gone both ways. You know, some guys he loves and relies on, and some guys he puts in the doghouse and it's impossible to get out. Where does Ryan Johansson stand right now with him? I know Tortorella complimented him on his game last night, but before that he had been critical of him.
Yeah, he is not one that has a doghouse that he thinks he's got to put someone in. You know, it's not like he comes in and say, I got to put a player in there and show these guys. He's a guy that you can count on, that he sees what you can do. He knows how good you can be, more than you know yourself, and he pushes you. And some guys that get pushed don't react as well as others. Now, Ryan Johansson, he didn't have a great start to the season. He's been good on the power play, but in some moments he just looks disengaged, and that was under Todd Richards too. You know, he was out with some kind of illness. We don't know what that is. I wouldn't say he's close to the doghouse, but he's going through a process with John Tortorella, much like Dubinsky did, much like Letavier did in Tampa, Dubinsky in New York, and now Dubinsky is thriving under this guy. So Tortorella's like that teacher you have in high school. You say, why is this guy all over me all the time? And then by the time you get your diploma, you're like, oh, yeah, I get it. That was exactly what I needed. So, you know, there's a process that goes into that. I think Ryan Johansson's going to be fine. He's just got to go through it a little bit here.
And, you know, in terms of Tortorella also, it's weird, Jody, because you kind of saw his idea in Tampa. All you heard was safe as death, and they wanted to pressure the puck, yet he goes to New York, and it's almost as if they back off the puck. They're blocking shots. They don't care so much about possession. Vancouver, he probably wasn't there long enough to really get a feel for it, but the read was in the short period of time he was there that he still had it kind of playing with that New York style. Has he changed the style and the system that he wants to implement here based upon his past experiences?
He might have a little, but, you know, his thing about blocking shots, he wants you to do it, but he doesn't. He says block the shot only because you want to, not because you feel you have to, and because you want to for your team. So I guess what he wants them to be thinking is, hey, boys, if we're going to win, we need you to be doing things out of your comfort zone. You need to sacrifice somewhere, whether it's taking a hit to make a play and you're not used to taking hits, whether it's throwing that body check to separate the guy from the puck, or blocking shots. And that's the one that stands out the most, because you see young guys, you see Wennberg and Carlson, who I spoke of earlier, two young Swedish players, who I would think would not be, I think you'd see a flamingo, honestly. You know, they'd pick up one leg and try to, you know, kind of pretend they're blocking the shot. But these guys are throwing their body right in there. And what do other guys do? They follow. So I think he's smart in that. It's blocking shots is a true testament to how much are you willing to give to your teammates as they're watching you on the bench. And that's where that comes from. I think it's you know, like Carlson said the other day, it hurt until he got to the bench, and then when the players were patting him on the back, it felt pretty darn good.
Jody Shelley is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jody covers the Columbus Blue Jackets as an analyst on Fox Sports Ohio. Jody, looking ahead to tonight's game against the Jets, obviously the Blue Jackets won't skate, given that it's the second half of a back-to-back. Last night, Brandon Saad missed the game in Washington. Are you expecting him to be back in the lineup? And, you know, a lot of talk about, you know, so far it's been Bobrovsky for all four games with Tortorella as head coach. Is this an opportunity where we might see McElhaney get the start in net for the Blue Jackets?
It could be McElhaney. We expect McElhaney to start. You know, one other thing is that with Tortorella, you don't get any pregame skates and not a lot of practice time, so you're really left in the dark until 5 o'clock tonight our time, which I think is 3 o'clock your time. Then he'll hold the press conference and we'll get it all ironed out. But I'm pretty confident that McElhaney will be in tonight. Saad should be back, we're hoping. I mean, last night in Washington, what we were missing was that guy to put that puck in the back of the net. And if he gets back tonight, that'll be a boost. Could see Jared Boal too. He's a guy that that John Tortorella has been trying to get in. He hasn't played yet since he's been here for his four games. So you could see Jared Boal tonight, especially against your big, rugged, fast Winnipeg Jets that could use a physical presence like Jared Boal.
Fedor Tuukka was a healthy scratch last night against the Capitals. Has his play been a problem for the Blue Jackets? I mean, he's been with that organization for so long now, playing in his 500th game just last week.
You know what? I don't think so. I think that it was a situation much like the Boal situation tonight, where he wanted to see Kevin Connaughton in the lineup. Kevin Connaughton's a young guy they picked up off waivers last year. Excellent player as far as getting pucks through to the net. So he really wanted to get him in, and he probably liked what he saw of the other five. So Tuukka was the casualty. It was such a fine line between all those guys. And Tuukka ended up a -2, I think, and, you know, Tortorella thought he was the odd man out. I don't know if that was his first healthy scratch ever. It might have been. Definitely as a Blue Jacket. So, as you mentioned, long-term veteran. And that's one thing about Torts. I mean, it doesn't matter who you are, where you've been, or what you've done. He's day-to-day and circumstantial, so you know what? That was the guy that they decided was the odd man out last night.
Jody, we wanted to ask you about David Savard. He signed a 5-year contract extension in the offseason, and I know he's off to a little bit of a slow start like the rest of the team is, but is it just a question of he's not getting those offensive chances yet, and I guess is he still, you know, showing his leadership skills on that blue line for the Blue Jackets?
He's starting to now. He was the last few games he has been. He was, I don't know what, if he was trying to do too much, if he was thinking too much, if he was uncomfortable. I don't know. He wasn't making passes. He's a big boy. He wasn't playing physical. He wasn't blocking shots. But a couple games ago in Colorado, a couple big hits. He laid out Landeskog, got everybody's attention. And when you do something like that, whether you get run over or you run somebody else over, it just seems to get you in the game that much quicker. So since then, he's done a better job of getting shots through. Like, you know, nothing worse than getting a defenseman with the puck, and he shoots the puck, and you're forward in front of the net, and it gets blocked, or it goes out of play. You know, it just kills the momentum. So David Savard has now found that rhythm where he's not hesitating to get rid of the puck. He's making good first passes, and he's being physical, which is such a big part of that big defenseman's game. So he's finding his way, but I agree, very slow start for David Savard. Kind of disappointing for the contract that he did just sign.
You know, Jody, you obviously cover the Jackets, so you've seen Todd Richards, you know, while working for the team, and of course John Tortorella in the short period of time. But you also played for both coaches, Richards in San Jose and Tortorella for your short period of time in New York. What's the biggest difference between the two?
Well, I had Todd Richards as an assistant coach, and an assistant coach is the guy that gets the inside scoop on the good stories from dinner the night before, or gets the yuck, you know, about some of the stuff that's going on in the room. He's the guy that makes sure that everything's good in the room and there's not, you know, any of the nonsense that distracts guys. So he was great at that. And, you know, I think the biggest thing is, Torts does something that I think everyone finds hard to do anywhere in life. I don't care what you're doing. And that straight up honesty, dead honesty. I mean, how often have we been told to our face how bad of a job or how great of a job or how expectations are way higher than what you're doing anywhere in life. And I think that that's what he does very well. There's no gray area. These guys now, the leadership group in this room is not hesitating to say something to a guy that needs something said to, because Tortorella's already laid it out there. And it's nothing against Todd Richards. It's just a style. And if you're going to have that style, you got to do it all the time. And we know, looking at John Tortorella, and I loved it. When I was in New York, man, there was no hiding. And it was refreshing because, you know, I'd come from San Jose, mm-hmm. where the problems were, why isn't accountability being held to this higher standard? And why aren't these guys understanding that they've got to do this all the time? Well, that's what he does so well. So that it's really refreshing as an older guy and as a guy that just wants to win.
Jody Shelley covers the Columbus Blue Jackets for Fox Sports Ohio. He's an analyst for them. Jody, really appreciate your time and insight this afternoon. Have a great call tonight when the Jets and the Blue Jackets meet at Nationwide Arena in about 6 hours' time, a little less than that.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me on. It's really my pleasure.
And Jody, enjoy the treats in the press box tonight.
Oh, I can't wait. It's Halloween, so this is the night we wait for as analysts in the press box.
Thanks, Jody. Take care of yourself.
Thank you.
Let's head to break. We'll come back more on the Jets and the Blue Jackets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Big thanks to Jody Shelley, Blue Jackets analyst on Fox Sports Ohio, for joining us. Great interview. In case you missed any of it, we'll have it up on illegalcurve.com and, of course, on tsn1290.ca. And just while you're at it, go to iTunes, subscribe to the show, get it sent to you each and every week. It's way easier than anything else.
Well, it's a good thing that you stayed in line, Drew, because Jody Shelley, 1,538 career penalty minutes.
Yeah.
Very tough customer.
He was tough.
He was tough, as right. Great insight, though, now. I mean, really, really good insight into that. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, it's brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100. The Jets and the Blue Jackets in 5 hours and 10 minutes from now, the three-headed monster of Bayak, Knighty, and Edmonds will have the call for you here on TSN 1290. You know, Blue Jackets, I mean, obviously struggling. I mean, you know, when you're 2-9 and you fired your coach already, I don't think I need to tell you that you're struggling.
Mm-hmm.
Jets have to look at this game as you got to jump on them early. This is a team with no confidence. You know, get on them early, get an early lead, which the Jets have had trouble doing so far this year. And, you know, don't even give them any you know, air to breathe and you should be okay.
Yeah, Drew, I think it's more about dictating the style of play today. The Jets want to have a good pace. They want to keep the pace. This is a big physical team up front. You know, they can be slow of foot. And I think the Jets want to be able to keep a fast pace up the ice, quick puck movement, quick in transition, and make Columbus play their style. That's the big thing to me. Because I thought against LA, who certainly plays their system as well as anybody, if not better, in terms of what their job is, you know, that old Bill Belichick, had to do your job, what you got from Al Davis, which has been passed on. And that's kind of what Daryl Sutter does, do your job.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do anything fancy, don't do anything crazy. So Columbus is going to want to impose a physical will on the game, get in on the forecheck and hit. Now that requires support and defensive awareness, especially from the forwards to support the defensemen, which has been an issue a little bit for the Jets. But I think the Jets want to make sure that puck is moving quick and less side to side and more get it into their zone, and then you can do what you want to do. But you want to make sure that you're making the Blue Jackets skate, and you're getting in on their defensemen, and you're making them make quick decisions. You know, Jack Johnson sometimes makes bad decisions. David Savard isn't the fastest guy. This is certainly a team you can take advantage of with your speed and skill. But you have to do that. You have to play your style. Because in the L.A. game, they were playing L.A. style, and then the third period, L.A. imposed their will. And then when L.A. got the lead over the last 5 minutes, it was game over.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that so you don't want to get behind these teams. You want to make sure, to your point, you want to make sure you get the lead. But if not, you just want to make sure the pace is what you want it as, because you'll trade chances with these guys.
Interesting to note that, you know, so far when the Jets have played one of the heavier teams in the league, be it the Blues or the Kings, you've seen Anthony Peluso into the lineup. Based on what we're hearing about the Jets pregame skate, it sounds like they're going to stay status quo with the lineup. Nick Patan's still in the lineup as opposed to him coming out for Peluso.
Well, I think the reason for that, Drew, is more so, I mean, Columbus has these physical guys, Dubinsky and Foligno and Hartnell and those guys, but they're on their top six, so they're going to be matching up top six.
True.
And you look at their fourth line, Gregory Campbell, Rene Bork, and David Clarkson. I mean, Clarkson can throw the body, and Campbell's tough, but that's still a line you want to make plays. So I think they're saying, okay, if they're going to make plays, we want to make plays.
So it's a function of the Blue Jackets' bottom six not being as physical as, say, the Blues or the Kings' bottom six was.
Yeah, I mean, not many teams are as physical as Ryan Reeves, Steve Ott. I mean, that combination there, right?
Yeah.
So that's or even Brodziak. I mean, he's not the most physical guy in the world, but he's certainly not afraid to throw, you know, to get into contact. And different line here. So I think you want to match it. And you know what? Tam made a nice pass last game. I think he's getting a little more confidence. I personally think, as I've told you guys, I think they should swap him and Burmistrov. Although Burmistrov played a nice game on Thursday, just to give him a little bit of a chance with some more skilled players, because he's not going to get any goals. He's not going to get any points, in my opinion, at least sustainable amount of points, playing with Andrew Kopp and Chris Thorburn. He's played with more skill. But just my opinion.
On paper, the Jets should win this game, Richie. I mean, you're a team that's 6-3-1.
Don't play the game on paper.
Exactly.
That's why you come to this show for that kind of insight.
Absolutely. That's
but,
right.
No, but I mean, you're talking about a team in the Blue Jackets that's 2-9. They're 2-2 under John Tortorella. They actually played a pretty good game against the Capitals last night, kept that game pretty low scoring, actually outshot the Capitals. I caught a little bit of it and caught the highlights. But this is a team that isn't very good, and whether it's Bobrovsky or Curtis McIlhenny in net, which, as Jody Shelley mentioned last segment, it might be McIlhenny because it's a back-to-back, you're going to be able to take advantage of not the best goaltending in the league right now, right? In fact, it's probably bottom five, bottom 10 in the NHL. So you're looking at a team that you should be able to go in and score some goals here. But, you know, it's also a team that under Tortorella is playing better. And, you know, they're going to get a boost, Richie, by being at home. It's Saturday night, you know, Halloween, they're at home.
Well, this is Tortorella's first home game.
Yeah.
It is. And when you look at the Jets and the way they've played into this stretch, sure, you had a couple of games that you'd like back at home. You didn't win all of those games, but they've played very well and they have a lot of scoring. And Nick Batan, I thought, played well last game, and I wouldn't expect Peluso to be in, even though he isn't, but I didn't expect Peluso to go into the lineup, even though, yeah, Richie mentions Columbus is a physical team, and that's what they do. But at the end of the day, they're trying to get points, so it's still a desperate team. So again, the Jets should be fine tonight. Pavlik's in net, but it's not going to be an easy game because there just aren't any.
They're a team that has depth. I mean, their top-end guys aren't dynamic. I think Ryan Johansson's a top-end guy. I think his style of play isn't necessarily dynamic. He's not the fastest guy, but boy, he's tough on the puck. And I know Tortorella's taking issue with him. But overall, they're going to beat you from all points, center, wing. Like, they're going to beat you with an assortment of points from different players on the roster. No, there's no dominant forces aside, I think, from Johansson. So it's not like Chicago with Kane and Taves and Hossa. It's not like that. They're going to get, you know, 30, 40 points from a bunch of guys. And one thing to watch, guys, is, you know, Paul Maurice has done a real nice job. Again, assistant coaches get credit as well, playing the matchups, getting Ehlers, Scheifele, and Perreault, I think their most dangerous offensive line thus far, out against other teams' soft pairings. Now, Columbus doesn't have a great defense, so you're not really too worried. There's no shutdown guys here that I'm overly concerned about if I'm a coach.
Mm-hmm.
However, I mean, you're on the road now, so the other team's going to get their matchups now. And that's going to be interesting to watch, to see the matchups tonight. How does Tortorella play it? And how does Paul Maurice react to it? You're back on the road. I think this is a challenging game. I think the 2-9, throw it out the window. Yep. I look at them as a 2-2 squad. They're playing with John Tortorella. Forget what happened before. I don't think they can play any worse. And if they're 2-2 with him, so be it.
And even though the Jets are a more skilled team and are just an overall better team, as Richie mentioned, I mean, Boone Jenner's leading the team in scoring right now. Boone Jenner's a good player, but nobody would have expected Boone Jenner to lead the Blue Jackets.
Goals, one assist in for 7 points in 11 games.
Right, and by the time the season's over, I'll be shocked if Ryan Johansson isn't leading the team. But the point being that Richie made is that they have players that can beat you from the wings. Alexander Wenberg is a good young center, 14th overall pick of the Blue Jackets. And even though that defense is a work in progress, they have guys that can jump up into the play. So I still think the Jets are going to win. I think they'll probably win by a couple goals. But I wouldn't be surprised if the Blue Jackets make it a closer game than I think people would expect based on the records.
It'll be interesting to see if the Blue Jackets get Brandon Saad back into the lineup. He missed last night against Washington. If he's not in the lineup, it's obviously a huge blow to the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Yeah, it is. It's a big blow. Jordy Shelley said he does expect him to be in there. But, I mean, the question for me, I'm sure we'll talk about with Rick later, too. I mean, the question for me is, can the Jets...
Well, we won't. You will.
Sure. But okay.
We can just text Rick and ask him.
Yeah, I mean,
in the middle of the broadcast.
But can the Jets defend the cycle?
Grind it down low.
Can the Jets defend the forecheck? Yeah. Those are the two questions. I mean, that's going to be a big challenge. The Jets are mobile enough, as far as I'm concerned, and they're big enough to handle that. But you don't. I can tell you one thing. That puck's going to go on the left side of the ice, not the right side. And by that, I mean that puck's going into Mark Stewart's corner and Tobias Enstrom's corner and Ben Chiarot's corner. So I'm going to Trouba, Byfuglien, and Myers' corner if they can help it.
No, but the team saw what the Ducks did to the Jets last year in the playoffs. Just send it into the corner and go beat up the left side defenseman and then get the puck off.
Now, that works more so in a series, Drew, when you can wear a guy down for a few games in a row. But the idea is that's where it's going to go. I mean, they're going to strategically put it there, I'd expect. And it's going to be an interesting challenge. So the transition game, as I said, see, what it's always what they're trying to do. How do you offset it? They're going to want to get that puck in the corner and get it on the forecheck. And the Jets are going to want to go quick pass, transition up the ice.
Sure.
So who wins that battle? Get
the Blue Jackets defense on their heels so the Jets can use their speed to try and get past
it. You want it to go back and forth because that helps your speed and skill game.
Quickly, before we have to head to the break in a couple minutes, Ryan Johansson, obviously Tortorella's come in and he's made an impact so far, calling him out for being out of shape. Is Johansson a guy who needed some tough love from a head coach?
Yeah, from what I've heard, attitude has been an issue for him for a while now, going back to junior days, going back to the AHL. And I'm not shocked that this is a marriage that didn't exactly work out from the beginning. He has the talent. He reminds me a lot of Ryan Getzlaff in the way he plays, protects the puck, sees the ice really well, can score some goals too. I'm not shocked that this is the way, but this is not one of those things where I think John Tortorella came in and said, I got to pick on a guy. From what you heard about Ryan Johansson, this would be pretty predictable that they would butt heads initially.
You wouldn't be surprised if maybe Jarmo Kekalainen or John Davidson whispered in Tortorella's ear about what they, you might need to light a bit of a fire under this guy's bum.
Maybe. I mean, you want to give coaches credit that they don't come in ready to pick on a guy, that they're going to make the read themselves, but we know these conversations probably do happen.
Yeah. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to look towards tomorrow evening's game in Montreal with Arpan Basu of NHL.com. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He covers the Montreal Canadiens for NHL.com. He's also the managing editor of LNH.com, which is the French language NHL.com. Arpan Basu, welcome to the program, and thanks very much for joining us this afternoon.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Arpan obviously brought you on to talk about the Montreal Canadiens ahead of the Jets Habs game tomorrow evening at the Bell Center. Is it considered a successful road trip? It ended on a good note for the Habs last night with the solid victory in Calgary after they lost their first two games in the season. You know, why have the Habs been so good to start the year so far in 2015-16?
Well, there's a few things that are going on, but I mean the main thing has been that they're able to rely on all four lines up front, and has produced, a lot of offense, really. I mean, the biggest question mark on the Canadiens this season was, will they be able to score goals, or will Carey Price just have to kind of save their skin every night? So far, they've scored a ton of goals. You know, they lead the league in goals, if I'm not mistaken. I didn't check today, but I'm pretty sure they do. And so it's been the depth that's done it. I mean, they get a hot trick from Dale Weiss last night, a third liner. Torrey Mitchell, the fourth line center, has 5 goals so far. So they haven't only been relying on, Max Pacioretty and that top line to produce offense. And if you look at their ice time, it's very evenly spread out among the four lines. So as a game goes on, generally speaking, teams, start to wear down a little bit, and that's where the Canadiens are fresher as the game moves on. If you look at their record in the third period, aside from that game in Edmonton, they've been really good. Of course, that game in Edmonton, they were atrocious. They blew a 3-1 lead and lost in regulation, but that was a bit of an anomaly for how they've played overall so far this season.
Arpan, it seems kind of ridiculous to ask this because the Canadiens are 10-2 right now, first in the NHL. As you mentioned, they have the most goals scored in the NHL, but is it possible that this hot start to the season will actually be a negative? And I ask that because this Montreal Canadiens team a couple of years ago went to the Eastern Conference Finals. This isn't a team that's just going to be happy with finishing first in the Eastern Conference. This is a team that has aspirations to go to the Stanley Cup Final.
Yeah, they do. I mean, I don't see the negative. The only negative, I think, if you want to look for a negative in a 9-0 start, it would have been that the Canadiens were unable to make any lineup changes. And so you saw some players that you know, some instances where maybe Michel Therrien might have wanted to bring some guys out, and then they lose a game in Vancouver, and then all of a sudden Alex Simon's out of the lineup. So now it's been two straight games that he's been out. It's a source of considerable debate here in Montreal, but, you know, I don't think anyone could argue that Alex Simon was playing fantastic, mm-hmm. although it could be argued that he didn't deserve maybe to get scratched. So that was the one thing that was sort of, I guess, bugging the coach a little bit, is that he said before the game in Vancouver, he said something that was a really telling quote, as it turned out. He said, "I don't want to see any players hiding behind the success of this team." And then they lost that game, and then Alex Simon was out of the lineup. So you can draw your own conclusions there. So, but really, there's, as you said, it's hard to find really any negatives in a 10-2 start to the season. And, you know, these are points that are banked. But, you know, historically, you look at Michel Therrien's teams, even going back to Pittsburgh, they have always come out of the game really strong. And eventually they hit a lull. And I think part of that is because the way the Canadiens play is a very kind of physically taxing brand of hockey. You know, forwards have to come deep into their own zone. There's a lot of skating. They pressure the puck all over the ice. It's draining physically. So at some point, I know it's going to happen. This team's going to hit low, and then people in Montreal are going to freak out. But the fact is that right now they have 20 points in the bank already, and, you know, we're not even into November yet. So that's overall, that's a good thing.
Yeah, 45 goals for ARP, and you mentioned, you know, that, I mean, their lead is on the next closest is considerable. You talk about Alex Semin, and he was playing alongside Alex Galchenyuk for a while there. Galchenyuk being the key to many people in terms of moving to the middle, playing center, back at center, after playing the wing for a number of years and the short experiment last year. How has he fared, and do you agree in the assessment that his needing to play at center is a key for this squad to make a run in the playoffs?
Yeah, I do, and I think it's more of a long-term thing than a short-term thing. I mean, if you look at the depth chart, you know, organizationally for the Canadiens, they don't have a hot young center coming up through the system, and the chances are good that they're not going to be able to draft one in the next little while, just simply because of how high they should be finishing in the standings and so how low they should be drafting. So if Alex Galchenyuk doesn't work out as a top-line center eventually, I'm not saying this season, but at some point, they're going to be in a bit of trouble. Because if you look at the Cup champions dating back to, you know, the 2004-05 lockout, every team has had at least one dominant center, if not two. So this is one area where the Canadiens lack. I mean, I'm not saying Thomas Plekanec is an excellent hockey player, but he's not your typical, you know, center that you're gonna worry about if you're the other team. He's not a guy. He's not one of the elite centers in the league. And so they kind of need that guy, and they're hoping that Galchenyuk becomes that guy. And that's why it was so important that they shifted him to center this year, because they had to see if he could do it. If he couldn't, if he was ultimately a winger, they probably would have had to go out and look for a center that they could have, you know, maybe projected into their to be their top line center. So that's, I think, long term wise, Galchenyuk is a key piece in that sense.
Arpan Basu is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He covers the Montreal Canadiens for NHL.com. Arpan, it took until Game 12, but Max Pacioretty was finally on the ice last night for a goal against. It's amazing that it's been it took till the 12th game for him to be on the ice when the Habs were scored against. Is he finally, I mean, is the league sort of finally becoming aware and taking notice of just how good a player Max Pacioretty is for the Montreal Canadiens?
I don't know if the league is, because I think he's still better than a lot of people think. I think a lot of people look at Max Pacioretty and they see a guy who has a good shot and who's probably at the lower end of the top rung of NHL goal scorers. But really, when you look at the numbers over the past few years, he's one of the top goal scorers in the NHL. Mm-hmm. It has been on a consistent basis. And his defensive play is something that goes completely overlooked, I think, by most people who don't watch him on a regular basis. I mean, he's on the top penalty-killing unit with Thomas Plekanec, and they've been good. They were put together last year and have been an excellent penalty-killing pair. And the one thing that I think sets Pacioretty apart from most players in the NHL is his ability to essentially skate down the ice and shoot an unscreened shot with no movement and beat an NHL goaltender straight up just by shooting it. And there's a handful of players in the league who can do that. And the one guy I think of immediately is Phil Kessel, who's able to to just shoot a puck and score on an NHL goalie. But there's very few players who can do that without making some sort of move or making the goalie move in some way or using a screen to actually beat a goalie with just a basic wrist shot or a snapshot or something. And Max Pacioretty can do that. So in times when the Canadiens are kind of struggling to generate offense, he will sometimes just come out of nowhere and score on a goal that no one expected. And that's just an extremely valuable thing for a Canadiens team who in the past really leaned on that because, you know, no one else, they would go through stretches where they just couldn't buy a goal. Now, under the current context, it's a bonus because they're scoring, they're getting scoring from just about everywhere. But this year he might actually get to that point where the whole league sort of realizes not only how good he is, but just how valuable of a player he is at both ends of the ice.
Arvin, we talked about Carey Price earlier. Everybody knows that Carey Price is the best goaltender in the NHL. He won, I think, 25 different awards last year. But Mike Condon has been a revelation as the backup goalie for Montreal. He picked up another win last night over the Calgary Flames. His numbers are remarkable, 3-0, 944 save percentage, 1.67 goals against average. How surprised have you been with the way Mike Condon has emerged as Carey Price's backup?
I'm surprised at how well he's played. I'm not surprised that he actually became the backup. I mean, that's one thing that I think a lot of people around the league were surprised only because they had the memory of Dustin Tokarski stepping in during the Eastern Conference Final a couple of years back and doing pretty well under the circumstances. And the fact that Tokarski sort of leapfrogged the backup at the time, who was Peter Budaj, and became the surprise starter all of a sudden. But the fact is that Dustin Tokarski last season was not very good. And Mike Condon was excellent in the AHL. So, I mean, I was kind of the mind that he had a better than even shot at claiming the backup role. Now, I did not expect him to come out of the gates playing as well as he has, but if you watch him play, he has a style and a look that's very similar to Price. Now, obviously, he's not Price, but, I mean, he is a technically sound goalie. He's a big goalie. He's more of a prototypical modern NHL goalie than Tokarski is, and it's a style that lends to you know, very few mistakes. I mean, he doesn't allow too many bad goals. And so having a guy with that sort of style working with Stefan Waite, the goaltending coach, who has had a big role in Carey Price taking that last step into total elite status, bodes well for the Canadiens. It bodes well for Mike Condon. I mean, this is a great story. It's a guy who had to, you know, wasn't drafted, got a tryout in the ECHL, got a tryout in the AHL, finally got a contract with the Canadiens. And the Canadiens showed a bit of foresight with this. The contract that Mike Condon's on right now, it's a two-way deal this year, but it's a one-way deal next year. So I think they knew that ultimately when Tokarski's contract was up, they anticipated Condon being backup, and Condon forced their hand and made them make that decision a year early.
Yeah, we saw the same contract here in Winnipeg, Arpin, with Michael Hutchinson. It sure has turned out to be a nice value deal. We haven't heard, Arpin, much about Zach Cassian since that accident, and he was admitted to this substance program for the NHL. Is there an update in there?
No, not really. I mean, the thing about the NHL and the NHLPA program is that it's confidential, other than the fact that they make an announcement that he's in it because he's suspended as a result. So. But other than that, I don't think we're going to find anything out until he's cleared to play. And that's, no one knows when that's going to happen. And when that does happen, no one knows if he's actually going to play for the Canadiens again. So all of that remains up in the air. I think right now the only concern is that he gets the help that he needs and that he comes out of the program clean and with those problems behind him. And then what happens from that point onward remains to be seen. But I mean, I think that the thing that, you know, the two moves the Bergeron made on the offseason in order to try and help address the top six scoring was Zach Cashin and Alexander Semin. And now both of them are out of the lineup. I don't know, you know, Semin might draw back in tomorrow against Winnipeg. But for now, the two guys at the GM went out and got to try and address the scoring are out and they're scoring regardless. So that's the situation there. But I don't know. I couldn't even give you a guess on when we're going to hear about what's happening with Cashin.
I mean, Arpin, considering the pressure and the attention that the team gets in Montreal, the Cassian issue, and then Semin being benched now, which probably most people thought would happen at some point in the year, but does that speak to, I mean, it doesn't, obviously the team is playing well, but does it speak to Michel Therrien's maturity as a coach that he hasn't really let anything become a distraction?
Well, one thing I'll give him is that he doesn't really care about all the noise that goes on around the team in Montreal. He's aware of it, but he never lets it cloud his decisions. Listen, most of his decisions this year, over his time in Montreal, over this whole second stint, every decision he's made has been obviously hotly debated, but largely criticized. I mean, I don't know if there's a coach who's won as many games as Michel Therrien has won since he's come here that's been as criticized as Michel Therrien has. And, you know, and it's pretty widely accepted around the league, especially in the, you know, in the analytics community. And there's a lot of people who just look at Michel Therrien as not a modern coach, as someone who has not changed with the times. And I got to say that, you know, coming into this season, his ideas for the tactical changes the Canadians have made, and just the general style of play that the Canadians showed a lot of change. And I think Michel Therrien proved that he's not averse to change, and he doesn't know everything, and that not everything he did was correct. And I think people are so used to criticizing him that it becomes hard to give him a bit of credit when it's due. And so, you know, I think we're in that situation now. However, I will say that the Canadians over the last, I'd say, maybe 4-5 games have shown some signs of some of the problematic issues they had last season of getting outshot, of losing the territorial battle, you know, being, you know, on the wrong end of the possession scale. So some of those things have creeped back in, and as soon as they did, people were jumping right on Therrien's back for it. So this is just the reality of coaching here, and I think this is specifically Michel Therrien's reality of coaching here, and it's never going to change, really, no matter what he does.
Yeah, on that point, Arbor, it's an interesting point in terms of that possession balance. I mean, you look at this roster, with due respect, I mean, this forward group, there's some skill there, but it's not overly dominant, and you're not Tampa Bay Lightning here, and on defense, you have some talent as well. But again, this roster, I mean, I wouldn't consider the best roster in the Eastern Conference. So what are the fans' expectations? I know they've played really well so far, but are the fans' expectations of Montreal realistic?
Well, I think they are in the sense that I agree with you that they don't have this all-star-laden roster of forwards, particularly forwards. I think the defense is pretty good, and I think stacks up against pretty much every other D-core in the East. I would, you know, put them up against anyone. But forward-wise, no. And that's why I think the approach that Therrien has taken is a smart one, in the sense that I'm going to build 4 balanced lines, and I'm going to roll them no matter what. And that way, eventually, they're going to win some match battles there. And the thing is, Therrien has totally disregarded the matchups. Uses his fourth line regularly against opposing teams' top lines. And Ken Hitchcock was actually really really eloquent about that when the Blues played them, is that, you know, they, by using the Torrey Mitchell line against Vlad Tarasenko against the Blues, you know, and the fact that they won that, or came out even at least in that battle, you know, provides so many other options when the other lines go on. I mean, that means your top line is going out against their second or third line, and it just creates a matchup headache for the opposing coach. So if that's a big advantage for the Canadians. But yeah, you're right in the sense that I don't think this is an elite roster talent-wise. They do have 3 elite players, one at each position.
Right.
You know, they have Subban, Pacioretty, and Price. And the question is the surrounding cast or the supporting cast, if they're able to help them out enough. And so far they have. Now, the question is how long is that going to last? I don't think Dale Weiss is going to score 40 goals. I don't think Torrey Mitchell is going to score 30 goals. Right. So at some point it's going to dry up. And the question is, what are they going to do when that happens?
Arpan Basu covers the Montreal Canadiens for NHL.com. He's the managing editor of French language LNH.com. Arpan, appreciate your time this morning and enjoy tomorrow evening's game between the Jets and the Habs in Montreal.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks very much. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Big thank you to Arpan Basu of NHL.com for joining us to talk about the Montreal Canadiens. In case you missed any of that interview or the interview earlier in the show with Jody Shelley, Blue Jackets analyst, they'll all be available after the show on LegalCurve.com and on TSN1290.ca. This segment is brought to you by our friends at Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and the home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at Bernstein's Deli. Sandwichcentral.com.
Yeah, if you haven't tried it yet, go and try it. You know, Drew, I've been eating so many of these sandwiches.
Uh-huh.
I think I'm just going to stockpile like 50 of them, you know, in my house just because I need a bed.
You need a working mattress.
Yeah, there's just...
He's going to use the sandwiches as a mattress? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, like put 50 sandwiches together.
This is the guy
when you're lying on the bed of sandwiches, you just pull one up if you're hungry.
Yeah, this is the guy who found a 3-day-old pizza crust under his pillow a couple years ago.
Yep.
It might have been last year. I'm not 100%.
You're not going to find a sandwich under my pillow because it's going to be eaten. So.
Yes. I'm shocked that there was leftover pizza under your pillow as well. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, sometimes you don't want to eat those crusts.
I'm a big crust guy, but that's a separate.
You don't like crusts?
No, I do like crusts.
You're pretty crusty, Drew.
I always eat the crust. What about the middle part, like the little dough stopper, dough middle,
like the dough ball when
dough ball? Yeah.
It's sort of hard.
I don't really think the dough ball is really in anymore. Who has the dough balls still?
There's a few places that have the dough ball, but yeah, the dough ball might be out.
It's out.
Yeah, it's like corduroy, but Drew brought corduroy back.
Oh, Drew's. I'll leave that one.
Thanks, there, Rich. We're not going to discuss sartorial fashion now on this program, are we? So as he wears my hand-me-down ties to most Jets games, I think.
I think that'd be a hand-me-up, Drew.
Hey, you know what, Drew? I mean, there's nothing wrong with those ties you gave me. I've bought a few ties lately, but once in a while I recycle those old. Why did you give me them if you didn't want me to wear them?
Drew,
I did want you to wear them. I didn't have a problem with
that. You're dissing them.
I'm not dissing the ties at all.
They're nice ties.
I'm just saying Richard's going to criticize my corduroy jacket. It's quite fashionable.
I mean, not just me. Kenny Weber, the Winnipeg Sun, also had some critical comments the other day.
Yeah, but Kenny was wearing a black shirt, red tie combination, and he wasn't dressed up like on Halloween like the devil or anything. So
I liked his combination.
Okay, well, I gave him some gears about it, and he got a little offended, so we'll probably just avoid that altogether. Anyways, the Jets and the Habs tomorrow evening on the second half of the back-to-back after the Jets and the Blue Jackets later on this evening. You know, Montreal Canadiens, this is the hardest game on the four-game road trip based on the records right now. The Habs, I mean, 10-2. You know, 45 goals for, 23 goals against. You know, Carey Price, of course. You know, I assume you're going to see Carey Price tomorrow. It's not a second half of back to back or anything for the Habs. So, you know, anytime you're facing Carey Price, you know, and if you can defeat Carey Price, you're, you know, thanking your lucky stars for doing so.
Yeah, and it's always a tough game when you go into that building, Richie, for any team. Bell Center, biggest arena in the NHL, or second biggest, one of the two. United Center and the Bell Center are the two biggest, but best fans. In the NHL, outside of the MTS Center, of course. It's a loud building. It's an intimidating building. But this Montreal Canadiens team, guys, even though they're certainly probably not as good as a 10-2 record, Rich, the 10-2 record is a little bit misleading, but we all had this team as a playoff team. This was a 110-point team last year, and you know, we didn't even talk about Thomas Plekanec, who's leading the team in points right now, coming off of that two-year contract that he signed. Two-year contract extension that he signed right before the season started. I mean, they've got a lot of depth. Dale Weiss got a hat trick last night, by the way. We didn't even talk about Winnipeg or Dale Weiss. First career hat trick. Good on him. I mean, Torrey Mitchell on that fourth line. I mean, there's a lot of depth. Not to say that the Jets can't skate with the Montreal Canadiens. The Jets can skate with any team. Mm-hmm. But this is a fast team. They're talented. You know, you mentioned Carey Price. I mean, you got to expect to not score more than three goals against Carey Price. I mean, he just doesn't let in a lot of goals. He's that good, right? So, you know, it's going to be a tough game. And you got to make sure that you're doing, you know, you're playing your style of game, but you have to make sure that you're not trading chances too much, because if you open up, Montreal Canadiens have a lot of players that can hurt you. You know, Richie asked Arpin Basu about Alex Galchenyuk. You know, even though he might not be, you know, dominating right now, he's been better, and I think he's going to continue to get better and better, playing center now, coming over for wing. But it's just a really good team. Move the puck well out of the zone, Richie. Good in transition. They're not an overly physical team, but they have players that can play physical. So, you know, it's a well-rounded team. The Jets, after the game against Columbus, are going to need to go in there and play a strong effort and get the good goaltending, because, you know, Montreal right now, their offense is going. That was their key difference, Richie, between last year and this year, that they weren't getting that secondary scoring. Now they're starting to get it.
They are, Izzy. I mean, and the guys that they're giving it to them, you heard Arpin say, Torrey Mitchell, different. These guys aren't going to continue scoring at this pace. They have great success right now, and there's nothing wrong with banking points, as Arpin mentioned. I'm not convinced this team is world beater. I think it's a good team. I think Carey Price is the best goalie in the league. I think with that being said, and the style that they play, the pace and the fast pace, and the Habs have kind of played this style for the past few years, and the game has just changed, and it's I think it's helped them, and maybe they had a great foresight to play that way. But, I mean, again, I don't think you're winning the cup if you have Thomas Plekanec as your de facto number one center right now. That's with due respect to a really good two-way player. I just don't think they're a dominant team. I think they're a very good team. And I think the Jets, they'll play, it'll be a pace game. So, very similar to Chicago, with less talent, better goaltending, better defense without Duncan Keith being hurt, better defense in Montreal. That's what I think the game you're going to see. It's going to be a close one, back and forth, a different game. I mean, I don't think you're worried about dictating style like you are against Columbus. You're worried about just carrying the play more so against Montreal.
Well, that's because there's a style clash between what the Jets really want to play, which is the up-and-down style, versus the Blue Jackets, who want to grind it out down below. Yeah, whereas against the Habs, it's like you said, it's a free-flowing hockey game where, much like you saw against Chicago, where there was, you know, maybe one significant body check the entire game,
yeah,
Montreal's not going to beat you up at all. Montreal wants to skate and you know, and move the puck and everything else. And
like,
you
look at their roster, I mean, how many guys are really going to hammer you? Dale Weiss will hit.
Yeah.
Smith-Pelly will hit. Gallagher certainly won't back down, and Yamalin is a real physical player. I mean, how many physical players do you really have on the roster? And again, that's not saying it's necessarily a bad thing, but it's going to be the way that you're going to play. So you're going to be more concerned with pace, and it's an important goaltending battle. I mean, you're probably going to see Hutchinson tomorrow after Pavlik plays tonight, and he's got a match price.
Easier said than done.
One game,
yeah,
not a whole season.
No, it's exactly right. One game, not a whole season. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to look at the Jets' goaltending, compare it to where it stands among the NHL's best. All 30 teams' goaltending, we'll break it down over the next couple segments. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Tied at one. Loose in front. There's a shot by Johnson. Stopped by Pavlik. Rebound on the side of the net. It's underneath Pavlik. He made another save.
Shortly after 1:30 in the afternoon... Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. This segment of the show brought to you by the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba. Philanthropy is a key pillar in a strong community. That's why the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba is proud to have provided funding to over 200 organizations in 2014, supporting projects and programs that would otherwise go unfunded or underfunded. For more information about the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba, visit jewishfoundation.org or call 204-477-7520. Much like we did with the defense of the Winnipeg Jets a couple of weeks ago, we're going to spend the next couple segments going through the Winnipeg Jets goaltending and where it matches up with all of the 30 NHL teams. I think we can agree that there's a few teams right off the top that, you know, they just have better goaltending than the Winnipeg Jets. One of the teams is the Montreal Canadiens that we just spoke about. Anybody arguing with that point?
No, Drew.
No? Okay. The New York Rangers with Henrik Lundqvist. You're also okay with saying that they're better goaltending than the Winnipeg Jets, clear cut?
Yes, I think that's agreed.
Pekka Rinne and the Nashville Predators, you're okay with that as well?
Mm-hmm.
What about Braden Holtby and the Washington Capitals?
I think Braden Holtby is pretty clearly better right now than any of the Jets' number one netminders, whoever you consider that to be.
Okay.
So I think Braden Holtby is a very good netminder. I think he's plays a lot of games, and Mitch Korn's done a nice job with him in there in Nashville.
So those,
Nashville and in Washington.
That's four teams that are clear-cut that we don't really even have to talk about because there's no question about it. You know, I'm just looking through the other, you know, 25 NHL teams at that point in time. I think there's probably discussion, at least, that you can have. The Jets obviously aren't going to be better than all 25, but there's certainly a discussion that you can have with regard to a lot of the other NHL teams and where the Winnipeg Jets goaltending matches up. So far throughout this season, the Jets have they're led by Michael Hutchinson in terms of goals against average at 1.75 and a save percentage of 949. He's won all four games he's played in, 4-0. Andrei Pavlik, 2-3-1 in the six games he's played, with a goals against average of 2.69 and a save percentage of 918. League average save percentage is 915. Goals against average on the league average is 2.50. So let's go alphabetically through the remaining teams, and based on current standings in the NHL, and talk about the goaltending. The Dallas Stars, they're led by Antti Niemi and Kari Lehtinen.
I think, Drew, that you have a debate as to which one's better. I have them being even, really. Like, that's how I've classified it. Kari Lehtinen, I think, of the four goaltenders, is the most naturally gifted goaltender of that bunch. We've talked on the show before, and I've been a big fan of his game. But can he win the big game? And Antti Niemi being there now pressures him. Of course, Antti Niemi winning the cup in in Chicago, and then being in San Jose.
I was about to say, when did San Jose win the cup?
Yeah, no, he's proven himself, but also had struggles. So I think it's even. I think the potential in Dallas is likely higher, but I don't think they're considerably better as of now.
Yeah, I'm with Rich. I'm going to put even down for Dallas and those two goalies. Antti Niemi, I think, really improves their depth there. And, you know, they're going to kind of share the starts there. Kari Lehtinen is the number one goaltender. But as Richie mentioned, I mean, Niemi has the track record. Lehtinen has the track record. He's coming off of a bad year. But, you know, as we were going through these teams, Drew, I think it's going to become clearly evident that even though some teams might have a number one goaltender that's better than either Pavlik or Hutchinson, when you combine Pavlik and Hutchinson, essentially 1A and 1B goalies, they're even or better than a lot of these teams. And, you know, for example, Roberto Luongo in Florida or Ryan Miller in Vancouver, you might say that those guys are a step above Pavlik or Hutchinson, but when you look at the backups, then the debate becomes a little bit closer. So even for Dallas.
I said we were going to go by points. I changed my mind. We're going to go by alphabetically. So the Anaheim Ducks are next up. They got Frederik Andersen in net and a backup right now of Anton Khudobin. How do you rank the Winnipeg Jets against those two goalies?
I still think it's even, Drew. I mean, I think Anderson's a really physically gifted goalie. I think he reminds me of Pavlik in the way that they're both big guys. They have ability to, I think they have potential to be very good goaltenders. Khudobin's not a big guy, but I think he fights and he works hard to be what he is, which is a limited backup in the National Hockey League. And then John Gibson there in the shoot. And now, of course, Hellebuyck here in the shoot. But I think that's even right now. And I know, well, truth be told, Anaheim can't score. That's their problem now, not defending and not goaltending. So I think it's even. I know people go after him, but he took it to Game 7 of the conference finals last year. Sure, he wasn't great in that series against Chicago, but I thought he was pretty good against Winnipeg and good against Calgary.
Yeah, I know we got to go quickly here because we have a lot of teams to go through, but I'm even too as well. Freddie Andersen hasn't got off to the best start with Anaheim, even though his numbers are pretty good. And Khudobin, his underlying numbers, whether it was with Carolina or earlier in his career, they were pretty good as well. So that's pretty good. And then you throw in John Gibson. Again, I know he's not playing right now, but he's also something to factor in there. So I'll pick a tie with the Ducks goaltenders and the Jets goaltenders.
Mike Smith and Anders Lindback for the Arizona Coyotes. How do the Jets goaltending rank up against those two?
Again, I have that as even. I mean, Mike Smith has the pedigree to be better. Lindback's not very good, but Mike Smith is very up and down. And so his success, I think, is very unpredictable. I think even though because his highs are higher and his lows are lower, so I'm going to put it right in the middle there.
Yeah, I'll say the Jets goaltending is slightly better than Arizona's, and that's because of the fact that, Anders Lindback, you know, he was number one goaltender for Tampa Bay at one point, but he still is struggling to find his game. And even though Mike Smith is an excellent goaltender who's represented Canada internationally, his game has fallen off a little bit. So I'm basing that more on what's happened in the last couple of years with all these goaltenders. Mm-hmm. So I'll say the Jets, but I don't think it's much better because Mike Smith is still an excellent goalie.
In Boston, Tuukka Rask, if you'd asked this question 2 years ago, there's no doubt about it. Tuukka Rask and the Bruins are better than the Jets goaltending. Since then, struggling in Boston, that might be a function of the defense more than his
and
play is.
Maybe his success was a function of the defense, maybe not. I mean, I can't discount his performance over the past few years. I'm still going to say it's better. You have to have him disprove that with a poor performance this year. Even lately, he's been playing better. So I'm not going to have this 8-9-10-game sample change what's happened over the past number of years. So I think Boston's goaltending is better.
I'll say even for this one. Tuukka Rask, we know he's won the Vezina Trophy. He's been an excellent goaltender for, 6-7 years now. And the backup goaltending is a little bit of a question mark with the monster there. So I'm going to say it's tied. I mean, I want to pick Boston, but I think I'll take Pavlik and Hutchinson as a tandem over Rask and Gustafson. I think Hutchinson, if you want to call him the backup, I think is better than Gustafson.
In Buffalo, Robin Lehner would be the normal starter. He's out on IR with an injury. Their backups now are Chad Johnson and Linus Allmark.
Jets are better than Buffalo. I mean, Leonard's got talent. He's got to prove himself, though. I think the Jets, that's a clear one there. Of a team that has worse goaltending than Winnipeg.
Yeah, and Richie, Leonard's a guy that's really struggled with confidence. And I think when Andrew Hammond emerged there in Ottawa, it was easy for them to pick Craig Anderson, a guy who's done it for many, many years, going back to when he was doing that with Washington and Colorado. So the Jets.
Yeah, and the first round pick made it easier.
Yep. And the Jets goaltending, so that's an easy one. Jets goaltending is better than Buffalo's.
In Calgary, where they have three goaltenders and none of whom are really doing the job very well right now.
Yeah, they're struggling.
Jonas Hiller, Joni Ordio, Kari Ramo has been recalled from the minors. How does Jets goaltending rank there?
Better. I mean, it's a bit of, it's completely out of sorts there, Drew. I mean, you're not getting performances from anybody. I think that's another team that they're better than, clearly.
Yeah, I'll say better, too. And, you know, I think it was a tough decision that they had to make. As you mentioned, you know, Ramo being placed on waivers. Ortio was good in kind of spot duty last year, and he struggled. And you could see, Richie, that Calgary's fallen apart a little bit because they're not getting the goaltending. It's still an offensively dynamic team with Gaudreau and Monahan and Hudler and Bennett and all that. But, you know, right now, again, we're taking this as kind of a snapshot with what's going on in the league right now. And Hutchinson and Pavlik are performing better.
Carolina, Cam Ward and Eddie Lack. Cam Ward, I mean, he's had the pedigree throughout the course of his career, but Carolina's been so bad for the last number of years.
Yeah, I think that's even, Drew. I mean, Cam Ward's been a good goaltender. Obviously, he's fought some issues over the past couple of years. Eddie Lack's a pretty good goaltender, too. That's a good solid combo. I don't think it's that the Jets are any clearly better or worse than that combo.
Yeah, I'll go even right now. Eddie Lack's only gone into three games so far with the Hurricanes, and he struggled a little bit, but he is an excellent goaltender. We remember him when he played with the Manitoba Moose. He's big. He's mobile. He's a great quote, by the way. Good personality. So I'll go even, too. Even though Cam Ward has struggled a little bit, that Carolina Hurricanes team is young and developing, so I think he's still an excellent goaltender. I know Richie thinks that Cam Ward might be kind of one of those guys that might get picked up by a team before the trade deadline who's looking for an improvement over in goal. So, yeah, I'll go even.
Chicago, Corey Crawford never really seems to get much respect. Him and Scott Darling are the goaltending duo for the defending Stanley Cup champions. How do they rank?
I think it's better. I mean, you can disrespect Corey Crawford, and I have in the past not thought he was as good as maybe he's performed, but, I mean, the guy's won two cups, Drew, and his numbers are pretty good, and he's gained confidence, and I think it's better.
I'll say even. I think Corey Crawford is one of the more underrated goaltenders, and I think that's because he fluctuates at times, and he had struggles in the playoffs last year. Richie, that's why they brought in Scott Darling. But I'm going to say, you know, it's even there because, again, I think Crawford doesn't get mentioned as a top 10 goalie in the NHL, but I think he should be.
In Colorado, Semyon Varlamov is the starting goaltender there. Rito Barra is the backup. You know, Varlamov obviously had, you know, a tremendous year a number of years ago, but since then it's sort of been a struggle for the goaltender. How do you see them ranking against the Winnipeg Jets?
I mean, I think Varlamov's better. I think Colorado's goaltending is better. I just think their defense is horrible, and their whole defensive game in Colorado was poor. I think if you were to swap teams, the numbers would be, I think Varlamov's numbers would be even better here. So I think it's better.
I'll say even. Rito Barra is a good goaltender. And I would agree with Richie. I think Varlamov, I mean, we know how good Varlamov is. A couple of years ago, he had 41 wins or 42 wins, whatever it was. He struggled the last couple of years. But I think the Pavlik Hutchinson tandem, I think, is better than Varlamov and Barra. And, you know, what I meant to say is not better, but I'll say even. That's a tough one, but I'll go even.
The Blue Jackets, you're going to see them tonight against the Jets. Bobrovsky and McElhaney.
Well, again, are you going to go on the past 10 games and the struggles with 11 games that they've played? I think Columbus is better. The goaltending is better there, and that's Bobrovsky, not McElhaney. I'm talking about a horse there, mm-hmm. A guy who's really proven himself before.
Has he?
Yeah, I'll say Columbus is better there. Bobrovsky, I mean, this guy's only a few years removed from winning a Vezina trophy, right? So, I mean, you got to give him a lot of credit. Even though they're struggling right now, it's not just Bobrovsky. Sure, he's let in some weak goals, but this guy's still relatively young, and he's going to be their goaltender for the foreseeable future. So I agree with Rich. I'll give Columbus the nod.
In Detroit, Jimmy Howard and Peter Mrazek have each played 5 games. Do they have a better goaltending duo than Pavlik and Hutchinson?
Similar. Jimmy Howard's had success and failures. Pavlik's the same. I think Mrazek's a young and up-and-comer. I think Hutchinson's similar. I think it's very similar.
Yeah, I'll say even. Peter Mrazek's a guy that came up through the AHL, like a lot of goalies have. And, you know, he's impressed many. Had 5 starts this year for the Detroit Red Wings, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, I mean, Jimmy Howard, if this was 2 years ago, well, again, Hutchinson wasn't here 2 years ago, but I would maybe give the nod to Detroit. But I think, as Richie said, it's fairly even.
In Edmonton, Cam Talbot was the acquisition from the New York Rangers. He's backed up by Anders Nilsson.
Yeah, I mean, Cam Talbot, they think of quite highly, and I'm not doubting that at all. I don't know enough about him. I just think that's too soon to declare them to be anything other than below the Jets. I mean, that combo hasn't proven enough. So below.
So you have Jets being better than the Oilers goaltending, Ezzy?
Yeah, the Jets goaltending is better. I mean, Talbot had 21 wins for the Rangers and really kept them at the top of the Eastern Conference standings when Lundqvist went out. So he's an excellent goaltender. But the combination of Hutchinson and Pavlik is better than what they have in Edmonton.
In Florida, they have Roberto Luongo and former Jets backup Al Montoya.
I mean, better. I mean, Roberto Luongo. You can say whatever you want about Roberto Luongo and the Vancouver stuff. I don't think anybody's going to say that he's not better than the guys that they have here. He's one of the best goalies in the league for the past 10, 15 years.
Now, see, maybe I misunderstood a bit. I mean, I was thinking more so the two goaltenders versus the two goaltenders they have.
Even so, I'm saying, like,
Luongo, I mean, still, you're saying, so far heads and shoulders.
If you think Hutchinson's better than Montoya, I hear that. I think that's true. I think Luongo, at the end of the day, is going to be playing good? Big games. Yeah, he's that good.
Okay, well, I had the Jets better than Florida for the simple reason that I think Pavlik and Hutchinson, out of the four, Montoya is the weakest out of those four goaltenders. So that's why I picked Winnipeg, because of the combination of the two. But it's clear, I mean, Roberto Luongo is one of the best goaltenders in the NHL. So there's no debate there that he's the best of the four. But I guess I was taking the maybe I misunderstood the exercise.
Jonathan Quick and Jonas Enroth in Los Angeles. Anybody, you know, Quick is, you know, he's got the playoff pedigree, but his regular season numbers haven't been great for a couple of years, but he's been, you know, seems like he's bounced back this season.
I mean, his numbers in the regular season, yeah, he's struggled. They've still been pretty good. They've been better than Pavlik over the course of the regular season. So even the guy's got a couple of cups. I don't think there's a question, really. He's better. It's better.
Yeah, I would probably say LA's is better, and it's tough for Jonathan Quick, again, because everybody kind of thinks he had this terrible year last year. No, it was just not very good for him. But, you know, they were able to move on from that season. The Kings are starting to play well, so I'll stick with the Kings as better.
Devan Dubnyk was amazing for the Minnesota Wild at the end of the year last year. For the last 30 or so games, he's backed up by Darcy Kemper. How do they rank against the Winnipeg Jets in terms of goaltending?
Well, I mean, Dubnyk's been incredible. I can't say I'm sold on a season and a bit of him. I'm sold on the fact that he's a starter. Is he going to be the most dominant starter? I'm going to say it's even. I need to see more.
I'll say the Jets is better than the Minnesota Wild. I realize it's a better... it's a great story that Devan Dubnyk was able to turn his career around under Sean Burke in Arizona. Darcy Kemper's really struggled, and one of the reasons why they had to bring in Devan Dubnyk. So I'll take Hutchinson and Pavlik over Minnesota.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look at the second half of the NHL teams as we compare where the Jets' goaltending ranks. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.